It's Access Utah. I'm Lee Austin. If you've been listening to this program for a while, you may recall this music. It's something we used to play to set up a segment known as Open Forum. We dropped Open Forum as a bi-weekly part of Access Utah, but pledged to bring it back occasionally when it seemed there was a national debate underway on a key issue. Today it's the National Political Conventions, John McCain versus Barack Obama, oh, and Sarah Palin. Tom Williams and I will be inviting your calls and comments throughout the entire hour. We'll also be joined by Deseret News political columnists Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb, and by two USU students who traveled to the conventions in Denver and St. Paul. It all starts after the news.
Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, celebrating 30 years of expanding minds, one story at a time.
Welcome to our post-convention Access Utah and a brief return of the program, Tom, that we used to call Open Forum.
Yeah, it's good to be back for this one-time event.
As I sort of tried to explain in the introduction, occasionally there's a moment when we're in a national debate about a significant issue, and it's the presidential election and the two conventions. So we're bringing back the program. Obviously, you, the listeners, are going to be the main driving force here. We hope you will call, share your thoughts on the Democratic Convention in Denver, the now just concluded Republican Convention in St. Paul, the candidates, and the Utah reaction that you're seeing now to the McCain-Palin ticket. Meanwhile, we do have a couple of guests that will be joining us, but your calls welcome throughout the entire hour today, 1-800-826-1495, or send us an email through our website at upr.org. Very pleased to have with us by phone columnist for the Deseret News on Sundays, LeVar Webb and Frank Pignanelli, co-write a column analyzing Utah politics. LeVar Webb has been a guest here occasionally. He coordinates the Utah Policy website and has been a Republican consultant. And Frank Pignanelli, former state representative and minority leader in the Utah House for a time. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let me just have each of you give me a brief overview, your thoughts on the two conventions. And I suspect we'll get a slightly different take from both of you. LeVar, do you want to go first?
Sure. I think both parties had good conventions. I think both parties emerged unified and enthusiastic and energized. So in that respect, I think they both did well. I think the Republicans exceeded expectations fairly dramatically, and I think the race has really changed as a result of what happened in St. Paul. Clearly, the Republicans were able to energize their base, which was really important with the selection of Sarah Palin. And I think that allows, because the base is supportive and feels good about John McCain now, I think that allows him to run more as a maverick, more as a Washington reformer, and appeal also to the moderates and the swing voters. And so I think the Republicans have really come out of this in better shape than anyone would have expected.
Frank Pignanelli?
Well, first of all, I mean, the Democratic Convention was just wonderful to watch. It was historic, and it's, you know, with the nomination of Barack Obama. And what was even more, I thought, heartwarming about is that a lot of the wounds that were there, I think, were healed. Not all of them were healed, but a lot of them were healed. And so that was a process that needed to happen. And I got to be honest with you, I agree with LeVar on the Republican Convention. I expected to sleep through the whole thing because, you know, it was going to be the traditional Republican event. And McCain, to his credit, shook it up with the appointment of Sarah Palin. And they are energized. They still have to deal with, you know, the person who never went mentioned throughout the entire convention, which was Bush. So, but what McCain did, which I thought was fascinating, was his take last night when he said, we didn't do what we should have done when when we controlled Washington. We didn't do what we should have done with in terms of the economy and things like that. So it was, and it, of course, got tepid response from that. So that, to me, was the most fascinating thing, is that he's trying to distance himself somewhat from what happened in the last 8 years.
And so I guess from each of you gentlemen, LeVar, you said that you think this changed the election. Do you now predict a Republican win where you may not have before?
Well, I do think it gives Republicans a much better chance. I'm not smart enough to know who's going to win, but I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be the kind of the dynamics that we've seen in the last two presidential elections, where the country is very evenly split. It's going to be up to a few battleground states and independent voters, and the bases of both parties are pretty unified behind their candidates. And so I think it is going to be very close. You know, it's not going to be a runaway by either candidate. I do think that, unfortunately, it's going to turn into a nasty negative race, at least as far as the attack television ads that are run by both campaigns. But the Republicans have a much better shot now than they did just a week ago. The very latest CBS poll shows them neck and neck, right even. So Republicans do have a better chance than they had before.
Frank, would you agree with an assessment I have made that, in a follow-up to what LeVar just said, the fact that it's likely to be very negative, that Republicans generally are better at running a negative campaign than Democrats, and regardless of what people say, they don't like negative campaigns, they generally work?
Oh, absolutely. You have to, you know, if you go just look at modern history, whether it was the Willie Horton ad of the 1988 campaign, or it was, you know, in the questioning of Al Gore's, you know, what he had done in the Senate in the 2000 campaign. Of course, the most striking examples is the Swift boat, you know, veterans, and those type of things in 2004. They just had better talent in that regard. What I think is going to happen in this campaign, however, you've got the 527 groups on both sides that are unfettered and well-funded, and so you're going to see a barrage of those things. And so, yeah, I think what there's some fertile ground for the Republicans on this. I mean, the jobless rate that was announced this morning is at an all-time high, and Barack Obama should be 10 to 15 points ahead just based upon the economy and what's happened the last 8 years, and he's not. And I think what it is, there's still this election is a lot like 1980 in the sense that you have a very unpopular administration, a very charismatic challenger, but yet some unease about the challenger. I think the Republicans are going to plow that fertile ground and really try to develop that unease with Barack Obama, saying, nice guy, but just like what happened in 1980, which was, you know, Ronald Reagan, but what the Democrats tried to do and couldn't do it. I believe this is one of those years, like 1980, where a lot's going to ride on the debates.
And what do you think the factors will be there? Will it come down to issues or personality? It always seems to be more important in presidential elections.
Right.
People's perceptions of character and personality.
And I really believe that personality plays a big role. That's how else could George Bush get elected? Just because people may have questioned his intelligence, but they were more comfortable with him in 2000 and 2004 against obviously more intelligent candidates. But they said, this is the guy I want in my kitchen, you know, having lunch with kitchen, you know, in my kitchen. So I think, number one, they've got to establish a comfort level, both sides, with their candidates, that's someone they like. But because there's these perceived crises in the economy, with energy and international affairs, that's why the debates, I think, are going to be important. Reagan had to demonstrate that he was more than just an empty-headed actor. And if you look at the trend was happening then, it really took off after the debate, because not only did he hold his own with Carter, he was actually able to box Carter in. I believe what you're going to see, I could be wrong, but what you're going to see this election season is he's neck and neck between Obama and McCain although the concern that the economy is going to increase and dependent on really who really structures themselves as the agent of change, but also the agent of reforming the economy and reaching out. In those debates will be the one who will win.
And I agree with that, and I do think the debates will be important. I think it does come down to who people are really comfortable with, who they view as presidential, and the person who really can lead. The issues are an important backdrop to all of that, and clearly you can't ignore the issues and just run on personality. McCain's campaign manager did say in an interview that he said this election isn't about issues, but he's not entirely right about that. And I don't think that he meant, again, that you can ignore the issues, but it will come down to who people feel most comfortable with, who they feel can lead this country. And I think, again, because of what happened in this convention, it does allow McCain to run as an agent of change. In fact, you know, fascinatingly enough, the Republicans tried to steal the change theme from Obama and talked about it a great deal in this convention. It was a major theme of the McCain speech. And because his base is now shored up, it does allow him to run against Washington. Ironically, even though he's a creature of Washington, he's been there forever, but he does have this reputation as a maverick, as not going along with the party all the time. And he went after his own party and leaders in his own party for things that they have done. So he's clearly going to run as that agent of change, the guy who can clean up Washington and improve the economy. And so it's going to be a very, very interesting race. The dynamics really have changed.
Let me just reenter.
One of the fascinating things, if I just insert here, the Republican convention. First of all, the Democrats had a well-scripted, well-organized convention, which was just amazing to me, because that's so unusual for Democrats to have anything that scripted and organized.
Yeah, who said that I don't belong to an organized party? I'm a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. That thing was so. I was just shocked how on time and on cue and everything. I said, "Are these Democrats or robots here?" I was just amazed. And then, of course, you watch the McCain speech last night and had the protesters and everything. It just is fascinating how that's flip-flop. But the underlying analysis of the Republican convention, which I think is fascinating for your listeners and everyone to think about, is that going into this convention, the person that was likely to get the VP nod was going to be Pawlenty. And the Republicans obviously have been doing a lot of tracking, as they're good at doing, and a lot of analysis. Going to this convention, they figured out a couple things that this convention, and you can see if you look at the convention. Number one, they had to deal with President Bush, get him up and get him out. And I mean, there was no mention, no reference, or anything to him. Secondly, hit on change. You know, the Republicans were smart, because what the Democrats essentially did, if you look at Obama's speech and stuff like that, they were speaking to Democrats. But Republicans very much, both in Palin's speech and Giuliani's speech and others, they were talking to the American audience, because they were laying these little subtle buzzwords like, we're different than what happened, you know, what's been happening in the last 8 years. The third thing is that the selection of Palin, the information that at least my sources were giving me is that It was Pawlenty that was the choice going into the convention. In the Democratic convention, McCain had made a decision on Pawlenty, and then they were looking at the numbers and realized they were not going to be able to do what they needed to do. Plus, the Obama momentum was to be so great after the convention that they needed to do something to shake it up. And McCain was, you know, that risk taker. So what you had was, going in the Republican conventions, the Republicans had done their homework that how do you stop Obama, how do you drive the buzz, and how do you reach out to their base, so that, which I thought was just fascinating, that Republicans do what they do well, which is they're very much tracking the undercurrent of thought, what was happening, and that's the result that we have today.
Our guests are Frank Pignanelli and LeVar Webb. They write a political column in Sunday's Deseret News. You can go there Sunday and get further evaluation of their thoughts on the conventions. We're also taking your calls at 1-800-826-1495. Let me go to Springdale, and Bettina is on the line. Hi, Bettina. Your thoughts?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm great. I'm glad to hear this program back, because that's what America is all about, is free speech. So thanks. And I always said that the Bush administration brought America under as a nation under, you know, one nation under God, because half were saying they were God and the other half were praying for deliverance. So.
Good line.
So anyway, but I think we give too much power to our presidents, and I think that there's a lot of distraction that goes on in creating these political elections. And I was, for myself, I felt bad that Obama didn't have Hillary as his vice president, and so the when the Republicans, you know, put in Palin as the vice president, even though I've always been in an independent, then I think, well, I have to vote for the women. So I'm in a double bind here.
Regina, thank you for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate
bye.
It. Bye. 1-800-826-1495. And before, I don't know if you want to comment on Regina's thoughts, but I do have a question I want to get in before we run out of time. What's the cabinet position that John Huntsman Jr. is going to pick?
You know, I don't know, obviously, and I would be surprised if there's an outright deal made between McCain and Huntsman, but I think there is a good shot for Huntsman to be asked to serve in the cabinet, and I don't know what it would be. I mean, obviously, he'd love something major like Secretary of State. I don't think that would probably happen, but I... You know, as a, I think to, as a show of the McCain bunch wanting to do something with Huntsman and to show the closeness of their relationship, you know, when Huntsman got bumped because of the changes in the schedule, you know, they found another very great spot for him, and that was to actually nominate Sarah Palin, and he did a good job with that. You know, I think the McCain camp had to go out of their way to really find that slot for him when he got bumped from the other. So there obviously is a strong relationship there.
Let me...
I think he gets asked to, if McCain wins, he gets asked, these are just based on my conversations with others, is to the Department of Commerce, Department of the Interior, Department of Energy, and maybe Ambassador to China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those would all be... good posts. Some of those, of course, the traditional the posts that you would give to a Westerner. I want to ask specifically about out West. There are several battleground states, and surprisingly now, Colorado and Nevada being talked about as battleground states. What are your views on how much those states have changed and who wins those two states?
Well, again, I think Republicans coming out of this convention and with Sarah Palin, I think they have a better shot now at those swing states, especially in the West. You know, I was very interested in your caller's comments that now she is torn because she wants to vote for a woman. She's obviously a Democrat. That is exactly what the Republicans tried to accomplish here with the Palin selection and the convention. So I do think it puts a lot of independents and moderates in play that were not there before, and I think those states will be Republicans will have a better chance at them.
I actually think the Democrats are probably going to pick up Nevada. As you know, there's been a hit in the gambling revenues, a lot of layoffs, and I think you're going to see probably just a tilt towards Obama on that. Colorado's in play. I do think you're going to. How Palin and McCain address, because they disagree with each other, how they address the environmental issues that do play well in Colorado is going to be a little bit troubling for them. And I do believe that Palin's going to pick up some, maybe the Reynolds Hillary supporters. I live with an upset Hillary supporter who is attracted to Palin on the ticket. However, I don't know if they're going to get the en masse they think, because Palin, look, she's articulate. She's done a nice job as governor, but she's very conservative. And as that comes fleshed out more and more, it's going to put people who traditionally vote Democrat in a real bind. I mean, do they vote based upon gender? Do they vote based upon policy? And that's very much in play, not just in Colorado, some of the other battleground states. And it'll be fascinating to see how the Republicans try to portray that image. The thing that could be the backlash, and you know, look, yes, I'm a Democrat, but I'm getting a little irritated at this. Both, you know, these elite snobs on both, you know, both Republicans and Democrats saying that, you know, if you're from the West and you've governed a small town or whatever, that somehow you're a boob. I mean, that's gonna. Everyone needs to be careful about that because you could have a backlash in one form or another on that.
Yeah. Finally, I just want to get your views on Utah is not a battleground state. We're not likely, probably, to see McCain or Obama here. But how does the presidential race affect state legislative races, other races around the state? I guess Democrats are happy that Mitt Romney is not on the ticket anywhere.
Happy? I think they're sacrificing animals. You know. Praise, oh, yes, that was a big sigh, because that would have changed the dynamics. The thing about it is, even though Obama's going to get hammered here, most Utahns are going to appreciate, they may not vote for Obama, but they're going to be proud of the fact that he's on the ticket. And it keeps a lot of these competitive races competitive, which is important.
I do think, though, that, I mean, clearly Romney on the ticket would have helped a lot of down ballot candidates, but I think Palin also helps. I think she really has. I mean, I think a lot of Utah Republicans were kind of bored and not excited about McCain. Clearly, you know, they supported Romney and McCain wasn't on their top of their favorites. But I think that dynamic has clearly changed. I think Utah Republicans are going to be excited about the ticket, and I do think that'll still help down ballot Republicans to some extent.
Where there is a close race or two,
yes,
in those few districts where I'm sorry, I should make
well,
fun
you're
of
right.
it.
There are
so you have about in terms of legislative districts, you've got about probably, you know, a dozen contests that could be swayed by external forces. Most of them legislative, a couple of county council races that would have been severely impacted by the Romney race. In the Romney selection, but you know, LeVar's right. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, you with Palin, you might be able to attract some of those moderate Republicans back to the Republican ticket that have traditionally may have voted for a Democrat or things like that. So, I mean, that could have a soft impact there. At the same time, I do believe that the economy is gonna help some if the Democrats are able to better position themselves as being the agents of change for a better economy. I still think that's going to matter in some of these swing districts.
The bottom line is we're not going to see massive change in Utah. I think the Republicans are going to still be safely in control.
That will be the last word, at least in this portion of the program. We're going to come back after a break with a couple of Utah State University students who attended the conventions. But I want to thank our guests, Republican LeVar Webb and Democrat Frank Pignanelli. You can see their observations on Utah politics in a column Sunday in the Deseret News. Thank you, gentlemen, both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Stay tuned. Much more of the program ahead.
It's the Beehive Archive on Utah Public Radio. I'm Elaine Thatcher. This week, learn about Ogden Valley's Artesian Park. First this.
The Beehive Archive is brought to you on Utah Public Radio by the Utah Humanities Council and the Mountain West Center for Regional Studies at Utah State University, with support from a We the People grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Lawrence T. and Janet T. D. Foundation. Visit Beehive Archive online at utahhumanities.org.
As the city of Ogden grew into a transportation and finance center in the early 1900s, new sources of fresh water were needed to sustain the growing population. Beginning in 1914, a series of artesian wells was dug near the confluence of the North, South, and Middle Forks of the Ogden River in Ogden Valley. Ultimately, 51 wells were drilled at irregular intervals into the 1930s, and the area came to be known as Artesian Park. In 1929, a typhoid outbreak from contaminated water in nearby Wheeler Creek increased the rate at which the wells were drilled. The wells in Artesian Park were possible because of several conditions in the area. Thick clay deposits from Lake Bonneville helped produce the proper environment for artesian wells. The wells also were cyclically refilled by rainfall and snow, as well as seepage from nearby rivers and streams. A Department of Interior study conducted in the early 1930s and published in 1937 showed that in the year between September 1933 and October 1934, 11,750 acre-feet of water came from Artesian Park. 19 of the 51 wells could be opened or closed, 25 had concrete catch basins, and many could be pumped with compressed air. In 1933, those wells served 40,000 Ogden residents. The end of Artesian Park was brought about with the construction of Pineview Dam, which was begun in 1935 and completed in 1937. The reservoir flooded Artesian Park under 30 to 40 feet of water. However, the wells were sunk 5 feet into the clay and the water continued to be piped to Ogden. The added pressure from the reservoir increased water pressure from the wells. The submerged artesian wells continued to feed Ogden until 1956, when Pineview Dam was renovated and enlarged. Research and writing for this Beehive Archive episode were done by Nicholas Demas. Sources and past episodes of the Beehive Archive may be found at utahhumanities.org. For the Beehive Archive, a production of the Utah Humanities Council and the Mountain West Center for Regional Studies, I'm Elaine Thatcher.
Support for Access Utah comes from listeners and Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Open Monday through Saturday, 7 until 1. Offering a changing menu of French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits. Serving lunch sandwiches Monday through Saturday.
And we're continuing our discussion of the Republican and Democratic national campaigns and the presidential race, which gets much closer now. People, I think, are now seriously paying attention to the presidential race. I'm Lee Austin. Tom Williams is with me as well. This is a brief return to a program we used to call Open Forum, and we do invite your calls and comments, your thoughts on the presidential race and the two conventions. You can call us toll-free at 1-800-826-1495 or email your comments through our website at upr.org. And we have some guests. Tom, would you like to do the introductions?
Yes, we have in studio with us a senior at Utah State University, Tabitha Lazenby. She attended the Democratic National Convention last week. So welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And she is an international studies major. I'm reading here you studied Nicaragua, Uganda, and Kenya, so some good international experience.
Yeah.
And with us on the telephone is Joseph Irvine. He's a sophomore, and he attended the National Republican Convention, and so obviously probably still, Joseph, in St. Paul?
Yes, fly out this afternoon.
So it's a great opportunity to talk to you as well.
So both of you were attending as Utah State University students. I guess you're both affiliated with the Honors Program, and you got to see politics up close and personal. And I should clear up, because it's an assumption, I'm not sure it's correct. Tabitha, are you a Democrat?
Yes, I am. I would consider myself a Democrat, but I wouldn't necessarily vote for the Democratic ticket.
And Joseph, Republican?
I will vote Republican this year, although I usually affiliate myself with the Independent Party. So.
Okay. Well, give me, both of you, let's start with you, Joseph, because this is the one that's just concluded. Your impressions of the Republican National Convention.
It was a very interesting roller coaster ride. That's about the best way I can put it. We started off very somber because of Hurricane Gustav. You know, Monday was just they took away all the speeches. You know, it was just purely business. We did have Cindy McCain and Laura Bush at the end, you know, encouraging us to donate, but absolutely no campaigning whatsoever. Tuesday we picked it up a little bit faster. You know, still talked a little bit about Hurricane Gustav, but started to put the political hats back on, so to say. Wednesday in my mind was sort of the climax. Everyone would think Thursday with John McCain was the climax, but just the environment, the energy there in that Excel Center seemed to, in my mind, to be greatest Wednesday. And, you know, obviously was still, you know, quite intense Thursday. But I see, you know, Wednesday is sort of the climax of it all, and then Thursday just sort of the cherry on top.
Tabitha, take us back to Denver. It seems so long ago, but it really was just last week. Your impression there?
Well, Denver was fabulous. It was dynamic. There was an incredible amount of energy during that week. I had the opportunity to work at CNN for my field work placement as a part of my academic seminar. So I got to see a lot of the behind-the-scenes aspect of the convention. And I also volunteered at Invesco the day that Obama spoke. I was there from 7:30 in the morning until 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Long day.
It was a long day, but it was completely worth it. I mean, there were 84,000 people in that stadium at the end of the night, and his speech was incredible. There were people crying, people chanting, and I've never experienced anything like that. So the energy, I think, was certainly the best part of the convention.
Again, we invite your calls for the remainder of the half hour or your emails. You can reach us by phone, 1-800-826-1495, or email us a question through our website at upr.org.
Part of the purpose of conventions these days, it's not to pick the nominee because that's already picked. I would think would be to fire up the base. And seems like in that respect, the Republicans had a bigger hurdle to cross. Joseph, you mentioned Wednesday. Do you think that was probably key, right? Sarah Palin's speech and selection. And do you think the Republicans are fired up for this election in a way that maybe they weren't before?
I think Wednesday definitely helped. I think even within the Republican Party, there were some, you know, questions about Sarah Palin, perhaps. You know, yes, she has this record of, you know, fighting, you know, against the Congress. And, you know, but I don't think we were completely sold that she was the one. And so I think Wednesday really helped, you know, even within our own party.
Let me and go back to you, Joseph. There is a quote in the Salt Lake Tribune today, if I can find it. They interviewed Utah's youngest delegate at the Republican convention, Carrie Fox, age 19. She said she wasn't sure that McCain's speech was right on target with young people. It was perhaps not an attempt to reach out to new voters. Quote, I'm not sure he connected with the young voters like myself. What do you think of McCain and the youth vote?
I think if you compare Obama's speech to McCain's speech, you know, probably there was, you know, McCain's did not target the youth vote as well. I think overall, you know, at least in my opinion, and maybe it comes as being part of that youth vote, I did not see, you know, McCain's speech Thursday as having quite the power that Sarah Palin's did. I think Sarah Palin's almost targeted the youth vote to a greater degree. You know, hey, I'm you know, still fairly young. You know, I want to change. You know, she brought up a lot of those same things in, you know, a manner that Obama would. And I think people were almost tired out by Thursday, and that McCain did not do what he needed to do to get everyone, you know, to get the energy level back to how Sarah Palin had it.
And how do you feel about the youth vote and where they may gravitate?
In terms of Obama? Well, Barack Obama has obviously had a great, a strong impression on the youth, and that has been where a lot of his strength has come from in his campaign. And I think in large part because he's been able to use social networking, online networking, Facebook. He's really been able to attract a lot of young voters. And a lot of young voters have registered to vote and are interested in the political campaign because of Barack Obama. So that is certainly where a lot of his strength in his campaign comes from. And that's what I think is so exciting about this campaign and certainly the Democratic race. Or the Democratic nomination was because so many young voters were getting interested in politics and wanted to participate in the political process.
Some people are speculating. We won't know, of course, until, you know, final in-depth polling happens. Some are speculating that the young people are being underrepresented in polls.
Because they have cell phones.
Technology, yeah. I wonder your thoughts, starting with you in studio, Tabitha.
In terms of...
Because pollsters would tend to go for landlines, the theory goes, and the young people all have cell phones, and it's the new technology, and...
And the pollsters aren't calling cell numbers.
Yeah, that is definitely a problem with polling, and it's something that they're working on. We actually had an individual from a polling institution, a research institution, speak about that, and they're trying to address, they're trying to work on ways to address young or to contact young voters via cell phones. They've had problems with the technology, but it's something that they're working on, and it's something that I think that they need to look at because young voters should be represented in polling. And I mean, polling is a form of statistical analysis, so it's never really completely representative, but it's something that, I mean, I'm sure that they will work on more in the future.
Joseph Irvine, how do you think the polling will hold up in this campaign?
I think I agree that the youth vote is not being represented, and that's, you know, a big population that could swing, you know, Obama or McCain either way, because they're so closely tied here in this election. I almost, you know, wonder, though, you know, yes, they are this sort of independent group that we can't really analyze, but I don't know that we're going to get a huge turnout from them on, you know, come November and it comes time to actually, you know, vote. I think, you know, they're excited. You know, they'll sign up for the text messages. They'll, you know, go and, you know, campaign and, you know, do all this stuff, enjoy the party atmosphere. But, you know, the key is, how do we get the youth out to vote? Because that's a problem that we've always had. How do we actually get them to go to the polls? So, you know, yes, they're underrepresented. You know, we ought to do more to try to figure out what they're thinking. But, you know, even youth who say they'll vote, you know, might not necessarily go and do it.
I know it's a challenge when you're a student from out of town. Now, for example, are you registered to vote in Camas or in Logan?
That's actually what I was going to comment on, is I'm registered to vote in Logan, but I think that's a problem for a lot of college students, is that maybe they had registered in their hometown and then they come to school at Utah State or another university, and when it comes time to vote, they aren't registered, or students don't realize that they had to register prior to voting for the candidate. So it's something that definitely needs to be addressed. Rock the Vote, an organization, has done a lot of work in terms of getting youth to understand their importance in politics and helping them to register. So
Tabitha Lazenby was in attendance and helped with the CNN at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. Joseph Irvine on the phone with us from St. Paul was attending the GOP convention. Let me ask a follow-up to Tom's question. Again, this goes about polling, and some are saying that people who are inclined perhaps to think of themselves more as Democrat, more of the traditional base, will tell a pollster they're going to vote for Obama. But, and I guess as an older participant in this program, I carry a certain amount of cynicism, and I think there is still a lot of racism in the country, and people ultimately will go into the booth and say, I can't vote for black men. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, it's certain. Overt racism is definitely something that Obama has to face, and it's something that, I mean, it's that he can't really address. You know, you never know what voters will do when they go into the box, and it's certainly something that he will have to face. And I mean, they argue that if he's 3 points ahead in like a Gallup poll on that voting day, he's automatically 3 points behind because he's an African American. And I mean, polls may say something, but when people go in and vote, it's a very different story.
And Joseph, your thoughts on that question?
Unfortunately, I think that there is some truth to that. I would hope that we're far enough, you know, past the civil rights movement that, you know, we would, you know, not discriminate and say, oh, well, you know, I can't vote for him simply because of his race. I would hope that we could vote for, you know, an African-American, you know, a female presidential nominee. I'd hope we could vote for, you know, whoever the case may be, based solely on experience, because, you know, experience at the end of the day is what it comes down to, what, you know, the ultimate issue is going to be, you know, when they're in that White House, is are they prepared to lead? So I think that there will be some slight, there could be some slight biases that will take away some of those votes that he may, you know, sort of have pledged. But I think he's done a very good job of establishing what his campaign is, who he is, what he's going to do. And I would hope that, you know, being in the 21st century now, that we could look over all those things from our past that would have otherwise, you know, in the past prevented us from voting for an African-American president.
Well, I wonder how our listeners feel about this. It could be as simple a comment as I'm voting for Obama or McCain, and here's why, or your thoughts on the conventions as you observe them. Again, the toll-free number, 1-800-826-1495. The email comes through our website at upr.org. Let me ask both of you a question. I frankly didn't watch as much of the conventions as maybe I should have, because I find them so predictable and scripted. And I think, Tom, you called it one big infomercial.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing if you're there, it's more fun. Tabitha, is that the case?
Yeah, I definitely would agree, because I watched some of the Republican convention on YouTube, and I thought to myself, wow, this certainly isn't as exciting as it was when I was in Denver. So I certainly agree with you in that case. But for my personally, my experience was fabulous. And I mean, as I said before, it was very energetic. You felt like you were making history. And so on my part, I mean, it was definitely exciting. Every moment of it was exciting.
And Joseph, throw this out to you and to Tabitha as well. I would think this is probably, in each case, you're the first presidential campaign that you're really focused on. So having really had the chance to engage in this, has your perception of politics in general changed for the better, for the worse? Starting with Joseph.
I was very focused on the 2004 campaign between mm-hmm. Bush and Kerry. I think this is probably the first, this is the first where I've been involved. But, I did watch how the 2004, unfolded. We had, I'm from Arizona, and we had one of the debates there. So there was a lot of energy in Arizona going on about the presidential debates. I think being involved this year and, just watching the entire process in, perhaps a little bit more depth than I had in the past, I think, my perception has changed, being able to see the actual, way in which things work is, been a very, eye-opening experience. And things I've been frustrated with as I've come to better understand the issues. But I think, the more involved you can be, the more educated you can be, the better decision you're going to be able to make.
Tabitha, you're nodding your head, agreeing with some of that.
Apparently. Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly. For me, as you said, I lived in Nicaragua and Uganda for the past year studying abroad, and it was a development studies program. So I came to realize that poor governance is, one of the biggest problems in terms of development. So, quite frankly, going into this convention, I was sort of disempowered about politics and the complete political process. But I think, and in many ways, I still am, because I mean, we may have a great leader. We may have, Barack Obama may be a great leader. McCain may be a great presidential candidate. But when it comes down to it, no matter which one is selected, they're only going to be able to make, three or four great changes. That's just history has proven that. So I think it's exciting. It's a dynamic time, but it's also important to realize that sort of it's the institution that needs to be changed. It's the foundation of politics that can be the problem.
I have an email, and then it looks like we've got a call. And I guess, Joseph, I'll ask you to comment on this. Kind of interesting. This is from Chad in Logan. There is one thing that must be said about the 2008 election. This election is in no way about John McCain. Republicans don't like John McCain. They didn't want McCain. And if they could run behind anyone or anything else, they would. If they could run a German Shepherd, a taxi driver, or an attractive set of throw pillows, they'd do it. Unfortunately for Republicans, McCain is the person they ended up with. After all, the preferred candidates were knocked out in the primary. McCain will be the unfortunate byproduct of an Obama-Biden loss. When you look at the election with this in mind, everything makes sense. This is why McCain makes so few public appearances, why his campaign keeps him away from the press, and is why Sarah Palin's speech was so roundly applauded. She gives Republicans someone to look at besides John McCain. McCain knows this. That's why he made his choice of Palin, what makes the choice of Palin so cynical. If he could run without ever appearing in public again, he would. That's from Chad and Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me just say to Chad, I was there at the convention, and unless you saw that energy was not the energy of, oh, we don't want Obama. That was energy clearly behind Palin and McCain, and I would, his comment about Palin never being seen in public again, personally, I think Palin did a better job and had more, you know, audience support than McCain. And McCain is 72 years old now. I think that's part of a testament to why he's running. A year ago, his campaign was falling apart, but he managed to pull it together. The votes from the primaries put him as the clear winner, so that's, you know, the people having their choice. Yes, there were people like Romney who also got a lot of the votes, but he clearly won the primaries, meaning he had, you know, the support of the people. I think people have come to perhaps better accept that he's our Republican, you know, nominee. I think, you know, a year ago and even more recently, people were a little disenfranchised and would not have wanted him there. But I think people have come to realize he has no agendas. He's 72 years old. He's told us he's not running again in 4 years. You know, he just picked this complete, you know, shocker of a candidate to run as vice president who no one else would run. He's not furthering his own, you know, personal, you know, fame, his own personal image. He's truly sincere about wanting to change the world one last time.
And just to clarify, Chad was saying that it would be McCain who would make no more public appearances again if he could, not Palin. I think Palin is going to be getting a lot of attention. Let's take a caller. Barbara in Hiram is online. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I lived in Dallas and graduated from high school there in the 60s. And I was downtown where there were signs at water fountains that said colored only and things like that. And so for me to watch the convention and see the response of black people at Obama's speech and the whole idea is just an amazing thing that in that much time things can have changed so much, because that was the time when Muhammad Ali was unpatriotic and not a Christian and, you know, the total outrageous reaction to his choices. But I just think for so many of us, and I realize that your two guests are too young to have experienced that on that level, it's just an amazing thing. So no matter how we vote, it's just a wonderful thing that we can have these two candidates, one in my age bracket and one not of my ethnicity. And so America is wonderful. Just a comment, that's all.
Okay, Barbara, if I could just follow up, what did you think of the choice of Palin for the Republican vice president?
Well, I'm sure he wasn't the only American that said, who? but why not? What does McCain have to lose? He's not going to run in 4 more years, and he's probably not going to make it anyway, but why not? It's kind of like the 41-year-old swimmer. She says, and they say, why are you doing this? She says, why not? So, I mean, you know, he has nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
By the way, Lee, I must have missed this. McCain hasn't made a formal announcement he's not going to run in 4 years, has he? That's just speculation, isn't it?
No, I think I have heard that. Joseph, you're the one who brought that up. Has he said specifically that he's not going to run for a second term?
I had heard during his primary speeches that was one of his, you know, promises, was he was only in it for one term so that, you know, he could best serve the people. I haven't heard it since, so whether things have changed. But I would imagine that, you know, being 72, he's probably not going to run again when he's, you know, 4 years later, you know, 76.
Well, he's roughly the same age as Reagan, so, you know, a little bit older. But, yeah, if I were a voter, I wouldn't take that to the bank. I would assume he's going to run in 4 years, but we'll have to see.
And John Huntsman is going to run for a second term as governor, and he has said he's only going to serve two terms. But, of course, if McCain wins, I suspect that he's not even going to serve for two full terms.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't remember it, Huntsman was lead out front for McCain when Mitt Romney was the clear choice. In fact, that was a little family disagreement.
Right. Yeah, his father.
Huntsman Sr. went for
Romney.
For Romney. So I suspect there's going to be a cabinet-level post for John Huntsman if McCain wins. And by the way, Joseph, do you agree with me on that one?
Yes. Huntsman did speak at the Republican National Convention. He spoke to a smaller Arizona delegation Monday. I think, you know, that he is very, you know, influential to the campaign and will, you know, probably be tapped for a cabinet position.
So does this, it's kind of similar to Tom's question, but change your view of politics? And do you suspect at some point maybe you're going to want to be involved in a campaign, either as a candidate or as an activist, possibly going back to a convention as a delegate? Has this had that effect, Tabitha?
Yeah, definitely. I certainly wouldn't say that I'm considering running for a political office right now. For me, I'm more interested in getting involved at the grassroots level, doing nonprofit work. But I think that something I did see at the Democratic Convention were leaders that were really out there to represent the public good. And, you know, I know that quite a few of our leaders probably are not out there to do that. But I did see that at the Democratic Convention. So I was sort of re-inspired in terms of individuals that are in politics. And so you never know what could happen, that's for sure.
Joseph Irvine for county council, for state representative. I'm speculating here.
Yeah, well, you mentioned going back running for a delegate, I'll just touch on that briefly. You know, I think it was a great opportunity. I think everyone should have the opportunity to go to a convention at least once to see the process. I don't see the convention as being that key a part of the political process, so I don't think I would ever, you know, make the time and, you know, financial commitment to run as a delegate. As to public office, I think, you know, perhaps locally, you know, as it's under consideration, I would, you know, perhaps consider running for a local office. I think one of the eye-openers in being at such a large event is I don't think I would make a good, you know, even governor candidate or senator candidate. It really takes a lot of money. You have to know a lot of people, and you almost have to fit this mold that I don't think I fit. You have to, you know, be one of these party people who can go out, you know, have a drink of alcohol with everyone, shake everyone's hand, know everyone by first name. I think there's more required to it than I'd be willing to do, but I do want to work on changing the world. You know, I have, you know, a foundation I run. I would see, you know, more work in that regard to being able to do more, you know, out of the politics limelight than inside.
So in the next 2 months, this election, either of you going to be out knocking doors, canvassing, buttonholing your fellow students? What are you going to be doing, starting with Tabitha?
Yes, certainly. Actually, I've never been involved with College Democrats at Utah State, so I'm hoping to get involved with the College Democrats and do some canvassing, as even though in Utah it may seem like it's not even worth it, but I'll do it, so.
Yeah. Joseph, same question.
If you look at, you know, the way the Electoral College works, McCain summed up Utah, all the electoral votes, so there's no point in me going and, campaigning for McCain. However, you know, I will be involved in smaller issues.
Okay, and finally, I'm going to put both of you on the spot. We just have a minute left. A prediction, the outcome in November in this presidential race. We'll go back to St. Paul. Joseph, you've got a prediction for us?
Prediction for November, I think that McCain is going to narrowly win. I see it as being very tied, but I think Palin is going to be what he needs. I think if you'd pick someone like Romney, who is more of the, you know, somewhat more of the same, I think that he would make it harder for himself. But I think his choice of someone is outside of Washington, as Palin, is going to be what he needs to take it home.
Ooh, that's a hard question. I have to say that, of course, Obama will win. But it is, you know, going into the convention, Barack Obama should have been a lot further ahead in the polls than he was, coming out of the Bush administration and 8 years of what we had. So it's really going to depend on him being able to continue to unite the Democratic Party, attract, you know, these sort of disgruntled Hillary voters, and continue with the energy that he has had on his campaign trail. So we'll have to see.
Okay, that's a qualified answer to a hypothetical question. Well, we're out of time. Joseph Irvine has been joining us by phone from St. Paul, where he was attending as a student from Utah State University at the GOP convention. Likewise, Tabitha Lazenby was in Denver. Both USU students joining us here for the post-convention analysis. Thank you both for being part of the show.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks for joining us on this special edition of Access Utah. CD copies of Access Utah are available. Call us at 1-800-826-1495 or go online to upr.org. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSU-FM 91.5 Logan, KUSR, and KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan.